So today's entry is called the Elixir of Innovation. And I think you can guess what that elixir is going to be, but we're going to wait and tell you what that is in a little bit. So I want to start with a story from the 1700s in London. There was a famous diarist named Samuel Pepys. And for the term diarist means blogger. He essentially kept track of his life and what he ate and what he did and what he wrote and published it all in a book near the end of his life. So it would be like blogging, but nobody gets to read what you blog until you're dead. So Samuel Pepys, in his diaries, he described what he used to eat and drink every day back in the 1600s. So he said, each morning he would break his fast, that means breakfast, stop fasting through his sleep, with a single pint of beer or ale. That was breakfast. And then at midday he would have lunch. And for lunch, he would have meat and bread and a pint of beer or maybe a pint of wine. Then he'd go to work, and on his way home in the evening, he would stop at a bar for another ale or some hard liquor. Then he'd get home to the meal prepared by his wife, and the meal would include at least an entire another pint of beer. That's what he ate and drank every day. Pint, 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 pint. And people at that time drank so much beer and wine because water was poisonous. At the time, the water supply was contaminated with bacteria, and drinking water in a big city would lead to dysentery because you would be ingesting all this bacteria. So the only safe thing to drink was alcohol, or something that had been fermented and the bacteria had been killed. Okay, so Samuel Pepys, he drinks all of this beer and wine and ale and every day. And he's not unusual. For people in the middle class and the upper classes, that's how they carried out their day. They drank more and more alcohol every day. And the entire country, this was the habit for the entire country. They were essentially in an alcoholic stupor. And they were lethargic in their body, and their mind was kind of addled and suppressed. And they weren't very creative. So this was a time when work didn't get done very well, and clever new ideas didn't pop up very often. Now, you think that that might have passed relatively quickly, but it didn't. And Benjamin Franklin, he made records of what he ate and drank in his diary in 1725. And here's a quote. Let's see if I can get through his quote. I drank only water, and the other workmen, nearly 50 of them in number, were great guzzlers of beer. On occasion, I carried up and down the stairs a large form of print types in each hand, when the others carried but one in both hands. They wondered to see how this, quote, water American, as they called him, was stronger than they were, and they drank strong beer. So see, they thought that strong beer would make them strong. But Ben Franklin realized that it was just making them weak and dull and uncoordinated. Okay, he goes on. He said, we had an alehouse boy who attended the print shop to supply all of the workmen with their ale. He said, my companions at the press drank a pint a day for breakfast. He said, my companions broke a pint. He said, my companions at the press drank a pint a day before breakfast, then another pint at breakfast with a piece of bread and cheese, and then a pint between breakfast and dinner, and then a pint at dinner, and then a pint in the afternoon about 6 o'clock. So you can see their dinner is essentially lunch. And then they had another when they finally got home at the end of the day, another pint of beer. So even in the 1725 era, people were still addling themselves with alcohol. Well, that was all about to change, thanks to an Armenian. In 1652, between the time of Pepys and the time of Ben Franklin, Pasqua Rossi came from Armenia, and he brought to England a new kind of drink that was popular in Armenia, but that was completely unknown in Europe and in England. And he set up a new kind of pub in an area called St. Michael's Alley. And he started serving this Turkish brewed beverage, brewed in that it kills the bacteria in the water, that was known as kahwe, K-A-W-E-H. And in Armenian, that word translates into strength and vigor. Now today, when we pronounce that word, of course, we say coffee. From that single cafe in St. Michael's Alley, this new drink began to spread all through England and then eventually through all of Europe. And it became more and more popular until in just 25 years, there wasn't just one coffee house in England, there were already 3,000 of them. Because people started drinking coffee and realizing how great they felt on this caffeine buzz. And so over the course of almost 25 years, Pasqua opens up a half a dozen of these cafes, and his competitors open up almost 3,000 more. So fantastic growth. Now, Pasqua Rossi himself, he benefited from the new business because he opened these coffee houses all over London and then eventually started opening them in Paris as well. And so he had a number. He was essentially like a miniature Starbucks at the time. Now, for him, he was just thinking this is a good way to share a drink that he likes from his native Armenia, and he doesn't realize that he's starting an entirely new culture in Europe, a coffee culture that's lubricated by the caffeine. The caffeine, the coffee, gives people a reason to come together in the coffee houses, and then once they're there, it stimulates their brain and gets them all talking. Thinking and talking and thinking and talking. And the more they think and the more they talk and the more they drink, the more ideas flourish. And so the French Enlightenment kind of comes out of this coffee house culture that gets built initially in London and then spreads through the continent. So the elixir of innovation is the coffee, literally, but it's also the culture of sitting around and sharing ideas over a cup of coffee. These coffee houses became meeting places that brought together the great minds so that they could discuss things. And you can imagine that in this time in England, the people who had enough free time and free money to spend a few hours in a coffee house were those who were relatively wealthy and well-to-do. And so they're in the coffee houses talking about knowledge and education, the arts, ways to improve the government, ways to improve business, and all these kind of discussions are starting to happen in this coffee house culture, which was not happening nearly as well in the ale houses, where discussions could take place, but they couldn't be quite so spirited because the more you drank, the more addled and argumentative you became. So one of the most famous businesses that was born in a coffee house is Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's of London was actually started in a coffee house in 1688. And the people who were insuring ships that were carrying goods around Europe were always in danger of going out of business. Because if I insure a ship and that ship sinks, that ship may be carrying enough goods to totally ruin me financially. Now, if the ship doesn't sink, the ship gets to port and I get to keep all of the insurance money that was paid to me. And Lloyd's realized that if you could pool a bunch of people and have 10 people put up the money for 10% of insuring a ship, then anytime one single ship sinks, nobody's going to be ruined. And so everybody's going to make more money in the long term. So that's what happened in England. Similarly, coffee houses in the United States were responsible for kickstarting what we call today the New York Stock Exchange. It was famously started under a buttonwood tree in 1792 out in the street. but the people didn't want to stand in the streets and buy and sell shares, so they migrated into a coffee house known as the Tontine Coffee House, and within a few months, that was the official location for the New York Stock Exchange that we see today. So if you look at the elixir of innovation, you know, it's possible that it's not so much the liquid coffee as it is the culture that exists in a coffee house that allows knowledgeable people to sit around and exchange ideas and make business deals. And so the culture of the coffee house is what stimulated the creation of places like Lloyd's of London and the New York Stock Exchange. We see a similar thing with the Cultural Revolution. So people like Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell initially started their American folk music singing in coffee houses. And that's where they attracted a following, and from there built beyond the coffee house into a national following and were able to spread their music and the ideas that they were espousing in that music throughout the country. And then similarly, if you look at the explosion of Silicon Valley in the 1990s, what else was exploding about that same time in about the same location? That's when Starbucks and Pete's Coffee and Tea were also just getting their start and creating a coffee house culture in which all of these dot-com soon-to-be millionaires could exchange ideas and find each other and make partnerships and exchange ideas from the latest technology. Now, if you look at Silicon Valley and you listen to some of the legends about the free cafeterias and the gymnasiums and the personal assistants that are available, what you see is a coffee house culture that goes beyond just coffee. You see that this community involvement and engagement is really an essential part to making these companies grow. And if you look at more traditional companies, you might ask, have they created this kind of culture, this kind of place where they can share ideas? Or are they more the kind of place where everybody sits in their own offices or in their own cubicles, and they only gather when there's a formal meeting time with a formal agenda, and then they depart to their cubicles again? If so, then they don't have the environment or the opportunity to stimulate each other and exchange ideas and come up with innovative new thoughts that could change the business. And I think that's the difference between those who embrace an elixir of innovation and the culture that it engenders and those who don't, those who are more strict and staid about their company culture.